Types are fascinating patterns that are best discovered holistically.
Welcome to Beyond Personality Types, the original InterStrengths podcast. Every week, we provide you with the better ways to use and talk about personality theories. I am your host, Olivier Caudron, a self-discovery facilitator. With me is Dr. Linda Behrens, internationally renowned for her innovative typology approach. Come with us beyond the indicator results to rethink what you know about personality types. Have you ever considered the limitations and potential overpowering implications behind calling your approach typing or profiling? Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Beyond Personality Types. In today's episode, we delve into how your role's name can unintentionally limit your client's self-discovery and exert undue influence over their insights. We want you to reflect on the responsibility behind that name. But don't worry, we're here to guide you with actionable steps to become more ethical in your approach. By the end, you'll be inspired and motivated to foster a more open, client-centered practice that respects the complexity of human personality and to make a positive change in your field. Let's see how increasing the awareness about your role's name can help you go beyond personality types. When it comes to assessing personality type preferences, it is often referred to as typing or profiling. While it might sound logical, it can also mislead. Like the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, this one-on-one personality assessment service is valuable. Yet, it might be one-sided and not consider a person in their integrality. Therefore, it may raise some concerns about its reliability and ethicality. Linda, at the InterStrengths Institute, you teach how to facilitate self-discovery. You don't talk about typing or profiling people. What are your concerns regarding those names?
Yeah. One of the challenges with profiling and typing, part of it's in the name and the expectation that it sets. And it sets the expectation that you know really what each of the 16 personality types look like and their variations, and that enough about cultural variations to get beyond that, or you know how to ask the cultural question. It sort of implies that you're qualified to do that kind of profiling.
If they studied all the different functions or they studied carefully the definitions, I can understand that they feel strong enough to identify a type.
What's really important is to recognize that you're not the expert. And actually, the person themselves is really not totally the expert, or they wouldn't need some help with identifying. The challenge here with the profiling is that it may be that they're only using one particular lens. So maybe they're using the eight function lens. That has a couple of problems. One problem is that the eight functions by themselves are not the same thing as a whole type pattern. So the pattern is the various ways those functions or processes look. Those processes will look different based on where they are in the pattern, how it's configured. If that's the only lens you're using in terms of what functions you're listening to, you might be able to identify the functions, but you don't know if that person is talking from something that's developed or talking from something that's been there from birth. You may not be able to identify the variations on how each process looks in each position in the pattern. That can be a limiting factor. It's also highly limited by the expertise and your experiences. How many experiences have you had? And how open can you be? It is the job of the facilitator to facilitate self-discovery, in part because the client is an expert in and of themselves. they know some things about themselves. Sometimes their self-perceptions may not be accurate. They're still part of the picture. If you go to a doctor, you expect the doctor to know whether to give you penicillin or an antifungal. The doctor has lots of experience. And at the same time, that doctor may not know how those things are operating in your body and what else might be going on. So a good doctor, my view, can gather lots of information, which insurance doesn't help much, but limitations. But still, people can have credentials. They've been certified. How deep is that certification? What's required for it would be a question to ask. And how many people of different age groups in different cultures and in different situations has that person worked with? Mm-hmm. A little aside, I had the good fortune during the very beginning of the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator popularity, it was really popular and there were a lot of programs all over the country. And I was able to provide qualifying programs and see people in this program talk about their type for 15 minutes. So each of the 16 types. Mm-hmm. And I did 1 to 2 of those a month. I don't know, 14 a year, mm-hmm. something like that, for several years. So I got to see each of the 16 types and get a gut feel for what they were like. That kind of expertise is hard to get, not just to toot my own horn. But I'm still not always right when people come to me. I sometimes get a sense, and then later it turns out that it was something else. Having a process where you invite people to explore different patterns on their own, much like shoe shopping. You see the shoes and you try them on and you walk around in them in the store, or you order them and then you walk around them in the house. If they don't fit, you take them back. If you want type to be relevant and useful, people have to get inside of it and try it on. That's one piece. The other piece is multiple lenses. Surveyors, when they're laying down a road or figuring out what to do with something, always take several measurements to know from different perspectives. The other thing in the profiling, if the person isn't listening for or using some way to get at what we call essential motivators, interaction styles, 8 functions, whole type, even another lens that's developing. But you have at least 3 data points to look at. And if you look at the functions by themselves, that's a problem because you're looking at processes, not at patterns. And if you look at processes related to the other models alone, that's not enough. So it's really about gathering enough information to have things point to several things. My solution to the problem of being the expert is to give people narrative descriptions. And there is research that says narratives over bullet points convey more than just the bullet points. I've given them some narrative descriptions to read and have them try them on. What I do is I put in my 2 cents worth and say, would you do me a favor and read this page and this page? So that then they're reading self-portraits of each of the 16 types, for example.
As you said, narrative works better than bullet points, but there are some people more sensitive to bullet points. Also, you have people more sensitive to experience something in order to know themselves better, thanks to some exercises, discussions also with other people. That helps to identify a preference.
I usually ask if they're still confused to go to people who know them well, preferably people who like you, and ask them, what was I like? And a lot of times, even in the training programs I've done, people would call up their parents and say, what was I like as a kid? Did I do this? Most of my one-on-one sessions involve people who are either going to be in a coaching setting, so I have more time with them and they talk about the situations, or in the courses that I teach. And we do have a fair number of people take the certification courses, and they're not interested in certification. They're interested in finding out more about themselves and learning more. The group activities where you get to go into a group and talk about how you see something, that whatever the topic is, and those people are like you. And then you get to hear other groups and you can change groups if you want. So that kind of group activity helps people clarify. Usually I get enough from the interview and the questions I ask to make an informed suggestion. and then people can come back and talk about it. Sometimes it'll be a different lens than we've been looking at that will help them. Sometimes it's a matter of thinking about what they were young or like when they were younger.
When you are in the one-on-one session, how could you be sure that you're not influencing the person?
And we can't be. Part of it's my demeanor, how I set the frame, that I can't tell you who you are. I can't tell you with 100% accuracy what personality pattern fits you. I ask a lot of questions, getting them to explore what was school like for you. Sometimes they'll go immediately to college. And then I have, I think I need to dive a little deeper. Tell what was it like early on? And sometimes I'll get some clues. But part of it is that I'm asking them about them, but I can't avoid being the expert. I just never tell them. Oh, I shouldn't ever say that. But I really am pretty sure that I've never said, you are a...
When I had the one-on-one session with you, I understood, even though you told me, read also this, I think it was an ESFP description. After the sessions, for me, it was like you told me you are an ESFP. Sometimes the clients leave the session and they hear what they want to hear, and that's very tricky.
Yeah. And that's inevitable. When I go to my doctor, who's a functional medicine physician, she won't do a short visit because she wants to hear what's going on with me and what she trusts what I tell her. She also takes it with a grain of salt because she has more information than I have. It's the nature of the beast. We do tend to turn to an expert, and so somebody with expertise or authority, but in this case, it should just be expertise. We tend to turn to them and we want to be told the answer. And then there are some people who don't want to be told the answer, and they're going to be really resistant to anything I suggest. There is a spectrum there, but the tendency is to, I say, do me a favor and look at, or this might fit you. It's a challenge. How do you put in the language and get people to not see you as the expert?
In the way we are educated, there's always that relation of the teacher knows and the children, they don't know. So they have to learn through the teacher. And there are some pedagogies doing the thing around. The teacher is offering the space for the learning. It is the kids who have to come with the material, with some observations to explain what they understood. We all go looking for an authority, someone who will tell us who we are, what we should do, how we should do it. Because the responsibility to do it by ourselves is something very threatening, maybe. We think that it will be too much. Again, giving the opportunity to someone to identify by himself or herself their preferences, it's a freedom. Freedom can be heavy sometimes.
Yeah. I use the Johari window usually in my explanation, which is a matrix of what's known to self, unknown to self, known to others, and unknown to others. Kind of identify where we're working with somebody. When they come to us as practitioners, there's stuff we know that they may not know. That means that you're just revealing some things that might be the case for them. Then there are things they know that you don't know, and that's some of what makes them experts about themselves and why it's a dialogue and it's a process that we engage in that is emergent, I would guess. Sometimes some of the things about themselves we don't know and they don't know. And that's some of what the models give us, like essential motivators. Many of us don't know what we're most motivated by. Mm-hmm. And if we don't know that, then when we get into a stressful situation, we may not recognize what is the stress trigger. It's really about the importance of recognizing that you're an authority in and of yourself. And I have some expertise and some knowledge that can help you. I'm not going to decide for you.
How to be sure that the professional is not projecting on the person? You are maybe listening and carefully listening, but how could you be sure that you are not projecting?
There are two things. The buyer beware. It's recognizing that we do project. We cannot not project. And people need to have done their own work on themselves and what their biases are. What I ask people in the certification programs to do is to write up their story about their personality, about their essential motivators, one about interaction styles, one about their cognitive dynamic story. And in that, I ask questions about bias. We work to get people to recognize their biases. big wake-up call for me one time was in a workshop, and I was pretty new to doing workshops. I can still see where this person sat in that U-shaped thing, and she said, "You don't like SPs, do you?" I was using those language. Ah, how awful. But anyway, and I had to say, you know what? Thank you for that, because I had some harm done to me by someone who I think had those preferences. It's always a process of uncovering what our biases are, and those biases come through in tone of voice. They come through whether you describe one pattern negatively and the other patterns positively. As the practitioner, you can wind up having people not want to own the pattern that you see because you have a bias against it. Those are two things. We do project and we do have biases. It's the constant self-awareness. The other thing is, in terms of control, the value of understanding personality patterns is that you become aware of your own perspectives. It increases self-awareness. You have to ask yourself, why are we doing this work? And for me, the work is about helping people increase their self-awareness and then increase their self-mastery or self-leadership, so that in a point of conflict, we don't destroy the other person. We wind up forging a better connection and coming to some solutions that will work. That's the purpose.
Someone typing and profiling, like a self-discovery facilitator, they are asking questions. They are looking for clues to fit in their own classification. Actively listening, asking good questions, open-ended questions, in order to gather as much as possible information. The difference is at the end of a one-on-one session with a facilitator in self-discovery process is a suggestion in a book. The person has the opportunity to read descriptions. It's not, I give you the solution. A person will leave your office, or I don't know how you call it, but with still a homework to have to read several descriptions, free to keep exploring. The process is the same. The end is different.
And we teach babies, children, to name things, dog, cat, and they'll say goggy, and they're looking at a cat because they haven't learned the name for cat. So they call the cat a goggy because there's some similarities. There's that whole continuum of the level of expertise that people have. So the newbies have a tendency to want to label people, partly because it's fun. And I see this in participants as well. If you're into typology, there's a certain ethics that you need to follow. That ethics includes do not label. You model what you want people to be doing. Behind this, as a practitioner, is the same thing as behind a medical doctor or a psychologist or a coach. Do no harm. So you just do your best to do no harm.
I had a great experience with someone I paid to identify my type. He asked me to record at least 20 minutes talking about what I wanted to do when I was young, what's stressing me the most. And he answered me with another video. Several times during the video, he said, I can be wrong. That was very respectful. So that was someone typing me, but carefully. And yet it was hard for me to not taking him as the authority on my own personality.
The person that you worked with sounds like PhD did a really good job of all of the disclaimers. I don't know whether there's some nonverbal things that happen that make a difference in terms of if somebody will feel like they want to be told if they're concealing something, like I'm hiding something, I know what it really is. I often really don't know for sure. I'm seeing both. It's a short amount of time. A one-off session probably isn't a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I prefer profiling to typing because a profile can be a complex thing. To me, typing means I'm typing on a typewriter.
I have the definitions here, actually. Typing is the work or activity of typing something by means of a typewriter or a computer keyboard. And for profiling is the practice or method of preparing a set of characteristics belonging to a certain class or group of people or things by which to identify individuals as belonging to such a class or group as to detain for investigation of a possible crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite close to what we are talking about until as to detain for investigation of a possible crime. So you said, okay.
Yeah.
You were explaining that for you, typing, it's using a keyboard.
Well, that was tongue in cheek. I hadn't looked up those definitions. I did look up typology earlier today. A typology is a classification system.
Mm-hmm.
A broad definition of typing is identifying what classification something would fall into.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge with both of those, the profiling and the typing, is that there's not a good name for it. It's sort of a quest for the people who want to, who have a capacity to do that, who have the skill to do it, like the person you saw. And then what do you call it? What do you say you do? The closest we've come is facilitating self-discovery. That's three words. It covers a lot of space
mm-hmm.
and takes more time. What is your profession once you get through with the certifications? You're an inter-strength practitioner,
mm-hmm.
which means you practice helping people have internal and interpersonal strength. That's our solution, that you're an inter-strength practitioner.
We are very respectful to all the other professionals. I know that all those people typing or profiling are very well-thinking. They don't want to do harm.
Yeah, it's well-intended.
That's the word, well-intended.
Now, I do know that some of the people in the field, it's like, what do you call it? Choosing a name of what they're teaching, say profiling, for example. What do we call what we're teaching
yeah.
people to do?
Yeah.
And how do we do that? My solution's a little wordier.
Yeah.
I would refer to them as practitioners. They might refer to themselves as profilers.
Correct.
Or they're offering profiling. If they're listening, I hope that they become aware that there are other things they need to say to the client. And that if anybody listening becomes a client, they just sort of need to, they don't take the name as one up and one down, that they're one up to you. You each have something to bring to the party.
We've covered a lot of ground today in our discussion on avoiding the pitfalls when we announce what we do and help a person identify their best fit type. If there's one thing I hope you take away from this episode, it's if you say that you typed someone, it means that you were the expert and might not have considered the person. Remember the importance of responsible and ethical practice in our field. Our role is not to label or pigeonhole, but to guide and support. You should approach each interaction with humility, ask open-ended questions, and be aware of your own biases. By doing so, you create a safe environment that respects the individuality of each person and encourages genuine exploration. As practitioners or type enthusiasts, we must continue to study multiple models, maintain an open mind, and always recognize the person as the true expert of their own experience. Visit interstrengths.org for more information about the certification in the self-discovery process to becoming an InterStrengths practitioner. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this discussion, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and review to help others find the show. Remember to subscribe if you don't want to miss next week's episode. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Beyond Personality Types. Thanks again for tuning in. We are Olivier Caudron and Linda Behrens. Stay curious and eager to learn until we meet again in our next episode.